Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are back on the campaign trail tonight with our Candidates Corner segment. We're sitting down with Maryland U.S. Senate candidate David Trone. He currently represents Maryland's 6th Congressional District, and he's running to replace retiring Senator Ben Cardin. We have questions for him, and I'm sure that you do as well. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Congressman Trone, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Let's first start with the news of the day. As you know, the former President Donald Trump was in D.C. to be arrested and arraigned on charges related to his alleged attempt to overturn the 2020 election. You know, from your perspective as a member of Congress, just kind of share your thoughts about the significance of today.
Well, it's pretty unbelievable that we've come to this point, but it's great to see justice is finally being served. And I was in the hall on January the 6th, and anyone that says that anything was peaceful or anything good happened that day, they weren't in the hall with me. When you can hear the rioters knocking on the doors, and you know we were evacuated to a undisclosed location, and it was an attempt to take over the government. And thank God that we were able to avert it, go back, do justice that night, but in swearing, affirm the election. But President Trump deserves every single thing that he gets. He has earned it time and time again. He will go down in history as the worst president ever of the United States. The man is a narcissist. He's exactly what you don't want in a public servant. He is all about himself. Public service is about others and how we can make a real difference. And that man cares nothing about others, and that's been his entire life.
Speaking of the service to the country, and I guess kind of where we are right now, also as a member of Congress, you see the divisions on Capitol Hill, whether it is in the House, the almost 50-50 division in the Senate. If you were to become senator, how would you handle those divisions? And indeed, how do you deal with it now? Some people, call members of Congress, the rabble rousers. And there's been a lot of that on both sides, one could argue.
Well, I'm a very progressive Democrat. And rabble rousing, I think, goes back to John Lewis's comment. I went to Selma twice with John Lewis. We marched on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in good trouble, is what John talked about. And he certainly led good trouble, and we miss him. But, we've got to figure out how to come together, and a lot of folks do come together, but there's crazy people on the Republican right side, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Boebert, all those people, Bob Good, Gosar, they're just bat-you-know-what crazy. And Harold, there's no talking to them. There's no reason to talk to them. All they want to do is take our country down, and they want to destroy the government. They want the government to go on strike here in November, December. I mean, so you've got to reach out hard and look hard to find folks that care about some of the things that are American. And think about the addiction crisis. I mean, I lost my nephew to fentanyl. I guarantee you, folks that have died of fentanyl. Mm. All of our listeners, they all know folks that have died of fentanyl. 110,000 dead last year. 80% were fentanyl. Over a million dead now in the last decade. And we're on a run rate of another million deaths. But I can find Republicans, because those dead are not just Democrats. They're Republicans. They're not black. They're black. They're white. They're brown. Everybody is dying. So we can go across the aisle. And I've had tremendous success going across the aisle on the addiction crisis, on the mental health crisis. You know, if you aren't feeling a little bit of anxious now with COVID, we got to teach people to say it's okay to say, I'm not okay. I'm not okay. And I want to get some help. And people need to know that. I mean, addiction is something that's in my family. My dad was an alcoholic. Mental illness is something that's challenged our family. And it's challenged all these families around America. And we can work with Republicans that we can find there. My bipartisan addiction substance use disorder mental health caucus, I've got 130 members. We passed 26 bills last session, became law on addiction and mental health. So you can work together, but you got to work hard to go find folks and share those common goals.
Is it at all possible, however, to find common goals when those members of the House who are very, very far to the right seem, at least, you know, from all indications, that they just aren't listening to their, as they say, friends across the aisle, particularly someone who would call himself a very progressive Democrat. I mean, they at least appear not to want even to walk on your side of the hallway.
Harold, you're dead on. I mean, not only do they not want to walk on our side of the hallway, they don't even walk on the Republican side of the hallway. They all sit together as a clump right down the middle aisle on the right-hand side, mm-hmm. the first 10 rows down. They just sit there. They talk to each other. They don't do a damn thing. If you're going to be in public service, you ought to try and get something accomplished. Get it over the finish line. Make a difference and quit wasting your life. They're wasting our lives. They're wasting Congress. They're hurting Congress. They hurt our country. But we don't need them.
But understand, they didn't just show up. People voted for them.
Terrible. It's unbelievable.
And so as a result, I mean,
how the heck did that happen, Harold?
Well, and it has happened, which is why, you know, I ask, it's not just them as individuals. They do have a constituency,
yep.
a very passionate constituency. And so are you just kind of throwing that baby out with the bathwater? And how would you be able to work either even in the House or in the Senate regarding that?
Those kind of folks that are like that, like the ones we just discussed, those hard Freedom Caucus, 20 individuals. It's roughly only 20. I sit on the Appropriations Committee, the most powerful committee in Congress. And we've got four of them there now. All they do is attack women's right to have an abortion, attack their LGBT folks. All they do is attack, cut budgets. Even though we made a budget deal with the president, with Republicans, with McCarthy, for the 23 numbers, all the appropriations bills this year are coming out, the 22 numbers, $140 billion less. That's what they're doing because McCarthy has sold his soul to those 20 for power. But we need to fight that, and we can eventually, some of those will get unelected. Lauren Boebert, we're going to take her down. She only won by 500 votes last time. If you've got a good candidate, she'll go away. But unfortunately, to your point, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's got crazy people letting her in, and she'll stay there until she goes away.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Maryland's 6th Congressional District Representative, Congressman David Trone. He is running for U.S. Senate in the state of Maryland, hoping to replace Senator Ben Cardin. If you have a comment or a question for the congressman, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk about your Senate race. Why do you want to be Maryland's next senator? And what do you believe separates you from the others vying for this Senate seat?
Well, it starts with who you are in life and how you've, where you came from and how you were raised and the struggles. I was not born with any kind of a silver spoon. I mean, when we lived on our farm, I was born in Cheverly, Maryland. My mom was a public school teacher. She taught public school in Greenbelt, Maryland. My mom and dad both went to University of Maryland. And my dad never would have gone to college, never, except for the GI Bill. So thank goodness for that. He served in an aircraft carrier in the Pacific Ocean during the war. So he got a college education. And then that set us up the value of education. But we ended up on a farm in Pennsylvania. And we were 12, 13 years old. We didn't have indoor plumbing. We had an outhouse. We weren't living with a silver spoon. And when I was 28, after I graduated college, undergraduate at Furman University. I've always been a good student. I love school. And we came back and I worked for my dad on the farm. We had 55,000 chickens, 600 hogs, and a real farm. It was a lot of thousands of hours of John Deere tractors and hard work. You learn to value, the value of hard work. But we also lived in a very dysfunctional situation. My dad was an alcoholic, and it was not very pleasant. It was very difficult. And we had a lot of real serious struggles. And then eventually those struggles and the dysfunctionality that alcoholism brings led to the failure. We couldn't pay our bills. We just could not pay the bills. And then we went bankrupt. My dad went bankrupt. His farm went bankrupt. And I lost, and my brothers and sister lost our home. We lost our job. And that was it. My dad went off on his own and married another woman. My parents divorced. And I took over as head of the family to try and move forward. And I actually became, at that point, Harold, an egg broker. So I brokered eggs. I was a telephone guy trying to sell eggs and pick up two cents on a dozen and sell eggs from maybe Pennsylvania to Ohio and from Maryland to, you know, down to Massachusetts. And that's how we supported ourselves for almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then failure hit again. The avian flu came out. Almost 7 million chickens were destroyed, including the eggs, the chickens that we brokered. I brokered eggs for. That was our way of supporting. But luckily, I had opened up a small beer and soda store in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The beer and soda store, that store had one good idea, low prices. We had low prices that drove customers in, didn't have any financing, so I financed it on float by selling lots of Coca-Cola and lots of Pepsi-Cola, who gave me credit, inexplicably, mm-hmm. but they did. And I used that float to buy beer, sell it cheap, took out student loans, and went to the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School of Business. And while I was there, I worked at the store in Harrisburg on Thursday nights, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, went back to Philadelphia, and eventually graduated and opened up a second store then and began to build a business.
Let me, if I may, I'm sure the irony is not lost on you as you shared that, you know, with your father was an alcoholic, and you've become a very, very successful wine and spirits merchant, modestly describing. Your thoughts about that?
No, it is very ironic, and I work hard with my dad, and I got my dad into a 28-day program, Gateway Center in Pittsburgh, and I attended there in the weekends. My dad then went through AA, attended a lot of AA meetings, and my dad got sober. And then my dad came back, and my dad worked for me the rest of his life until he died of Alzheimer's in 2011. So I was able to get that turned around, but the irony of that, being the largest retailer now, literally in the United States, for wine and the same for spirits. I mean, we have 12,000 employees. We've been blessed. We have been blessed to be able to become successful. And that's why I'm in politics, because I can want to take other folks and help them that are struggling, those who don't have a voice. As you look at the issues I work on, you see every one of the issues I do are folks that are struggling. They have no voice, and they're personal. Mm-hmm. They're personal to me.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Maryland Congressman David Trone. He is running for U.S. Senate in Maryland, hoping to fill a seat that will be vacated by the retiring Senator Ben Cardin. If you have a comment or a question, definitely give us a call. Lines are open all the way up until 8 o'clock at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are going to take a very short break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast. That's on WHUR.com, and you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. As I said, lines are open as you're calling in now. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back with Congressman David Trone of Maryland in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Candidates Corner segment, and I'm here with Maryland U.S. Senate candidate David Trone. He currently represents the state's 6th congressional district. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. David, calling from Maryland. Upper Marlboro. David, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just want to say one thing. Listen, he's got my vote. He's got my vote. And in fact, I'm just trying to find out how do I, can I get a phone number where I can call to volunteer? Because about 50 members of my homeowners association up in Upper Marlboro, this other young lady that's running here in this county, we've got a real problem with her, that she's unresponsive to all our issues and our needs. And we would hate to see her get elected to that office. And I'll tell people, you know, frankly, Mr. Trone, if you just give us your phone number, we can organize down here in this in Prince George County here. We just don't think that also Bush woman is worth a damn.
Congressman, you can, if you your phone number, if you or whatever you want to share information that you want to share with David, you're certainly welcome to do so.
Yeah, we'll get the good information for you and get that back to you right now. I wasn't prepared to give out campaign information. I was just on a mission to answer questions and tell people why the heck I think I can be effective and why I do this job.
You know what they say, you got to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. David, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Charlie, on the line. Charlie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just want to voice my opinion. I'm sick of all of you all politicians. Y'all all lie to us. They should lock up Bush for lying about weapons of mass destruction. Trump, Biden, all of y'all. Biden enacted the Citizen Act that took away many black Americans. You sell beer and your father was a drunk. You know what I'm saying? All of y'all lie. It's the same that this American government has taken us here. We are in a y'all need to listen to the people. You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous that what's going on now. We are they downrated our credit worthiness. You know what I'm saying? The citizens got to pay for it. You know what I'm saying? All of y'all lie. We need to start all over. The whole governmental system is just ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? The lock this, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I'm sick and tired of it. My mother can't get help. She's sick. She worked all her life. She can't get no help. You know what I'm saying? It's just ridiculous. Y'all, every one of y'all lie. I'm just sick and tired of all of y'all. Fire every one of y'all in every House, Senate, the President, Biden, Trump, all of y'all need to go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Charlie, thank you so much. I think, you know, Congressman, that Charlie's passion and frustration is not unique with politicians as a whole, whether it's, you know, from the White House to, you know, town councils. How do you change minds like Charlie's?
I think Charlie hit it pretty good. I mean, you might be surprised. I agree more with Charlie than you might have think. We have a rigged system. This system is absolutely rigged. It's rigged for the folks that are in power to stay on power, to take care of themselves. And that's one of the biggest reasons why I got in Congress. I'm not a politician. I'm a business guy. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm certainly a philanthropist, but I definitely don't want to say I'm a politician. I've done this 3 terms now, and I'm doing it on a mission It's a mission on addiction, a mission on mental health, a mission on systemic racism that we have throughout our country, a mission on thinking long term. We don't think long term in government, long term about climate change, you know, long term about education, long term about medical research. And we got to think about our next generation. Every decision we make in Congress should be about your kids and your grandchildren. We don't think long term, and we're much, much worse off before it. Charlie's right. The system is rigged. We've got to fight to change the system, and it's not going to be easy. I can't promise anything is going to be easy.
I just got a tweet or an X, depending on where we are in this whole social media thing. And this comes from Mopo DC, and he writes, or they write, what has he done for the most vulnerable and those who are struggling? He sounds like the other oligarchs that is all about profit. Again, obviously someone who is, you know, frustrated with politics, politicians, and the like.
Yeah. Now, first of all, I think the most important thing is we got to get the dark money out of politics and all the political influence out of politics. When someone takes money from PACs, someone takes money from lobbyists and the corporations, you know those folks aren't just writing those checks out of the goodness of their heart. We don't take any, I take no PAC money. I take no lobbyist money. We take no corporate money. I spend my own money. We raise money, sure. But mostly, I just spend my own money because I give a damn about trying to change the system. And I've been fortunate to be where I am. I've been lucky.
And that, because that's what I was going to say. Even the best meaning public servants who want to be elected to public office do not have the advantage of deep personal pockets. Not certainly not starting out. I mean, you're a millionaire. You got a ton of money. I think that's a difficult argument for those who want to do well. No matter, you know, what their politics are, Republican, Democrat, in the middle, up the side, up the back, whatever. But, you know, we know that the reality is it does take money, and not everybody has your kind of money.
You're absolutely right, and that's one of the biggest issues with the whole system. One, folks are out there spending all their time raising money, then going to be beholden to those that they took the money from, and then making sure that they're, what they do in the future is going to get more dollars coming their way. I'm lucky. I'm in a unique place that I'm able to take money that I earned over a period of decades, starting with zero, not like Trump with a silver spoon, starting with nothing and working my tail off to build something, and now have a chance to give back. I mean, Charlie mentioned a while ago about helping others. I mean, we passed, as I said, 26 bills last time on mental health and addiction. I got Pell Grants back for returning citizens. Pell Grants. My company, Total Wine & More, the last 7 years we've had over 1,400 returning citizens. I work with the Bureau of Prisons, Colette Peters, literally week after week after week to create jobs. Because how are we going to end the economic, the pipeline of prison to prison? One simple word, jobs. Working with companies like FedEx, UPS, Walmart, Target, JP Morgan, if we can get jobs for folks, recidivism is 8%. If they don't have a job, within 5 years, it's 75%. There's 2.3 million folks incarcerated. 95% are going to come out. How do we want to keep our streets safer? We all want to be safer. Mm-hmm. Let's get folks a job. Let's help them. And I've done that at the American Civil Liberties Union for the last 15, 20 years. At the American Civil Liberties Union, we set up, my wife and I set up, the Trone Center for Justice and Equality. The Trone Center has 45 lawyers, work out of New York City, led by an African-American woman out of L.A., and we work on, all across the country, the death penalty. Three strikes, you're out. Mandatory mens, solitary confinement, all the prosecutorial issues that I've saw and experienced, some myself in my life. And I was able to succeed when I was attacked criminally. I was personally attacked criminally by a corrupt Republican attorney general by the name of Ernie Priate, who later then went to jail on another unrelated charge. He went to jail for a couple of years on corruption. But I went through all of that. At the end of the day, I came out and was able to create success and live the American dream. But I knew I had to give back and help change that system. I succeeded because I'm white, because I had resources to hire good lawyers, and I had education not to take a plea deal. Because if you take one count, and that was offered to me day after I got arrested a third time, and I said no. If I had taken that, I couldn't have built the company that I've built. So I learned from that, and at the end of the day, that's why we went and set up the Trone Center in New York. That's why I'm the leading advocate in Congress. It's not a criminal justice reform. It can't be a black issue. It has to be an American issue.
Well, that as it relates to your candidacy, and you just mentioned the issue of race. Obviously, Maryland has not had a person of color in its U.S. Senate seat ever. You know that there has been some discussion that, as it relates to perhaps an Angela Alsobrooks or a Will Jawando, that maybe it is time for that. Maybe it is time for both a person of color and a woman. What would set you apart from Angela Alsobrooks first? I mean, obviously, we did have a caller who was not a fan, but she, at least in the D.C. metro, she is very, very well known.
Yeah. And that one gentleman that was a fan, our number is davidtrone.com, or if he wants to volunteer to help out, so thank you. But we have one simple, straightforward message. I've lived a life and showed I can get stuff done. People are sick and tired of the same old BS, the same old back and forth, the same old empty promises. We need someone that can fight and has a mission and a goal and knows how to succeed. You need people that know how to be successful because they've worked it, they've spent the time, put in the time, and you look at what we've done in our business, I mean hiring returning citizens, banning the box 20 years ago, putting in same-sex benefits 20 years ago, and our business, hiring full-time folks so they can have retirement, they can have higher wages, they can have health care. All those things are good business practices. But at the same time, working hard to create and change a criminal justice system. Talk about a few bills quickly. We mentioned Pell Grants. That's my bill. Well, how about the cops counseling bill? We like our policemen not to escalate problems so we have a safer community. Well, we had a policeman commit suicide in Montgomery County because of PTSD, so we passed a bill to let policemen get counseling. I think we all want folks that are carrying a weapon to have good mental health. So that's now law. They now have counseling. I did another bill with Karen Bass, mayor of L.A. now, and she and I, our bill is $350 million of grants to police forces to learn how to de-escalate. Take the fire out of the room. And when they go to a situation that's a mental health situation, not violence, to recognize it for what it is so they can use their words, not use a weapon.
But and I understand that. And, you know, understand I have had an opportunity to speak to at length even before they announced their candidacies. And honestly, you know, listening to you now, there is nothing that you've said that I think Will, Councilmember Will Jawando would disagree with. County Executive Angela Alsobrooks, I don't think there is anything that she would disagree with. The other gentleman, Jerome Siegel, who has also entered the race. He entered, I think, in May. Not familiar with him. Never had any conversations with him. And so I guess I ask again.
It's the ability to how to get with the other side, the Republican side. There's 60 votes you need in the Senate, which means we got to get 10 Republicans to vote with any bill. We're ranked the 10th most bipartisan member of Congress out of 535. 10 out of 535. That's because you can be progressive, but you can also be bipartisan. No one else passed 26 bills last year. No one else gets bills passed on due process and criminal justice bills. We work with Republican senators, Tillis, Cornyn, Capito, Cassidy. We've already got the connectivity all through the Senate, all through the House with Hakeem Jeffries, Catherine Clark. We've got those connections already made. We've already shown a track record of getting stuff done. No one else gets that, makes that happen.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Big J calling from Maryland. Big J, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Mr. I'm sorry, Congressman.
Yeah, Congressman Trone. Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, Congressman had to know me very well because he's a decent guy. He humiliates publicly like this by bad word because my problem he don't want to hear because I was black. But I never back down to be there and support him. I take everybody who is listening tonight like a witness. How you want to treat the black community when we come to become a senator? Because when you already in Congress, we know how you treat us. Now you want to become a senator. Can you really, really listen to black community? Never use some word you use on me that day because I answer publicly and I be humiliated publicly.
Apparently, Big J, did you have a conversation with the congressman at some point, or?
Yes, publicly like this, and I was being publicly in front of many people because he asked a question and then I asked a question, but I can't.
So let me ask you, if you can, and I am having some challenges with your accent, what is your question?
My question that day was, I be sent to jail by liar people, and they make me lose 2 houses.
So I think, let me say that because, you know, it would be very, very difficult for us to get down into the weeds of a very personal problem. The only thing that I can really, you know, suggest to you is, you know, that you may need to follow up with the congressman's office or something like that. But it would be difficult for us to kind of litigate these issues right here, Big J, but I would certainly encourage you to follow up, and I'm hopefully your staff will attempt to. Yeah,
and just be crystal clear, whoever Big J is, you know, I've never had a conversation, and I've never heard such baloney in my life. So don't insult me. I stand for folks, white, black, brown. I work my tail off every day for folks, white, black, and brown. And don't make up BS, because I don't have the time and life for it.
Big J, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So let's talk about Maryland right now. What is it that Maryland does not have that you believe it needs that you could help it achieve as a U.S. senator?
We got to focus on Baltimore City and Baltimore County. But Baltimore City, as Baltimore City goes, that's the success for the state. That's the engine that drives the state. And we've got a major problems in Baltimore City on housing. We've got problems on housing for African-American housing. We got to change the status from renters to homeowners. We need to figure out how to invest, work with the governor more. We got a great governor. We got a great opportunity and time right now to build Baltimore City back. It has more housing stock than any other city in the East Coast. So, but we've got to get the dollars invested in Baltimore City so that housing stock can become livable and then get those houses to folks for maybe $1, and then they can own those houses and have a situation where they can be an owner. And when you're an owner of a house, the community becomes safer. The community becomes cleaner. We got to build black equity in Baltimore on entrepreneurship. African Americans are the lowest level of entrepreneurship in America, just like the lowest level of homeownership. We got to fix that. That means we got to go to folks that don't have credit. I didn't have credit when I started. And yet I figured it out, but it was hard. But it's impossible for most folks. I got lucky. So we got to be able to get them credit, even though they're not credit worthy, but they are credit worthy because they have an idea to build a business. We got to love ideas and encourage ideas to build businesses in the African-American community. And we've got to get our education system right. If we don't invest in education, what do we expect? If folks can't read by the time they're 7, 8 years old, do we expect them to be successful? Of course not. We've got to invest money in it and help Baltimore City, parts of Baltimore County, and Prince George County. I mean, Prince George County's education is 23rd out of 24. It's the most wealthy, well, it used to be the most wealthy, African-American community in the country. They've lost that now. Charles County's now the most wealthy. But we've got to invest in that education. Why should that be 23 out of 24?
So
makes no sense.
So, you know, there's a saying in Maryland politics, and I've been hearing this since I was a kid. You know, call me a political nerd at 12 years old. But as Baltimore and Prince George's County goes, so goes the state.
Agreed.
But we have seen incredible population growth in Montgomery County. We have seen a shift, as you just mentioned, as it relates to wealth from Prince George's to Charles County. Do you think that these more recent changes could affect who wins the seat, or do you still believe that the key is Baltimore and Prince George's?
No, I think the key is just what you said. It's Baltimore, and that's Baltimore City and County together. They've morphed together in Prince George. I mean, that's where they were struggling. That's where the education's not happening. That's where it's not safe to go to the gas station, as my opponent said. I mean, that's a real problem. I mean, and we got to address that. And you address it with education, you address it with housing, you address it with black entrepreneurship, and you address it with returning citizens who are all coming out to get a job. If someone has a job, there's not going to be crime. We're going to have to get folks jobs and help our police. We got to support our police with mental health support. They need to be able to deal with addiction. They need to deal with folks that are mentally ill.
As it relates to, you know, education, and for anyone who is moving, having lived in, since graduating from college, seven cities, and one of the things that is a determining factor as to where somebody lives is a school system. Before you move, whether you have children, you will often determine whether or not you're going to move to that community because of the school system. Why do you suppose that Prince George's County is still struggling with its educational system, and what can be done to shore that up?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the education system in each county is under the purview of the county.
That's true.
So yeah. The county executive is responsible. The buck stops there on your education system. And if your education system stinks, don't go blame somebody else. If I'm that person in that seat, I'd look inward and try and analyze it. Do I have the right teachers? Do I have the right training for my teachers? Do I have the right infrastructure for my schools? Are we using the right curriculums? Are we thinking hard enough about vocational? Because not everybody wants to be an English major. Not everybody wants to be a history major. But we got so many great jobs available for folks that want to be a plumber, an electrician, do drywall. Why not partner with some of our unions and work side by side with them to get vocational training? We've got great unions all through Prince George County. IBEW 26. They need more electrical workers. All of our folks, so many folks over there could work with folks to come out and get good jobs and be successful. But it's got to be leadership, and that's got to happen at the county level, because the county executives, they're the ones that run the schools. But the Fed can help out, and the federal government has helped out. And I give President Biden some credit. There's $3 billion coming. None of it's moved yet for mental health for K-12. $3 billion. Let's focus on our children. If we think about our children, we'll never go wrong.
There is another issue that while it this has to do with, you know, I guess, you know, government red tape and how decisions are made there. But this really is an economic issue. And that is the new FBI headquarters. There is this really big push me, pull you tug of war between Virginia and Maryland as to where this new headquarters is going to be. I mean, you are, you know, you're certainly on Capitol Hill. You're hearing, you know, the rumblings and all. And when the General Services Administration had the presentation, everybody and their mama from Maryland was there. Okay, from, you know, from the governor to you know, to members, you know, of the House, you know, senators, Virginia, not so much. And, you know, I don't think I'm overstepping to say that Virginia seems to be awfully confident in getting this headquarters. What are you hearing, and what does Maryland have to do to shore up its chances?
Governor Moore has put together with the Congress, Steny Hoyer, a tremendous package that says, by all rights, the FBI headquarters should be located in Maryland, most likely, of course, in Prince George County. It should be there. Economically, it should be there. The site is superior. But my instinct?
Mm-hmm.
My instinct is it's going to Virginia. It's going to Virginia. There's a lot of folks at the FBI. They want to live in Virginia. End of story.
The academy is in Virginia, and the big argument is okay. The academy is in Virginia, and but the other thing is that in Maryland you've got, you know, the alphabet soup of U.S. Defense Intelligence, NSA, and you've got Fort Meade, and you know, and all of the other kinds of things there. But, you know, what, you know, at some point, are we just kind of in limbo right now? Like you said, your instinct says it's going to go to Virginia. And if that happens, does Maryland lose political clout?
It's not good. It's tens of thousands of jobs. But I think Governor Moore has been spectacular in advocating for our state. He's made a persuasive case. I mean, I was at the GSA when he presented the case, and we've been privy to all the background on the cost savings and the better site we have here in Maryland. But at the end of the day, that's why we need to change politics. Politics is rigged. And I think the FBI, I think it's rigged that it will end up in Virginia. Mm. And that's unfortunate. That's wrong. But it may be, unfortunately, a reality.
I have a kind of a final question in these last, I guess, 3 minutes or so. We kind of started this conversation just reminding people that Senator Ben Cardin is going to retire, and which is why you and others are running. How would you assess his tenure, and how would you differ or perhaps build on the work and the legacy of Ben Cardin?
Just to start out, I mean, Ben Cardin has been a spectacular U.S. senator. I mean, I wish he would stay and stay and stay. It would have made my life a lot simpler. I was making good headway and on from appropriations and really getting things back for my district and helping my district. And, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, Ben made a decision. He's been a great senator, and he put Baltimore City, Baltimore County, and he knew that's the key part of the state that he has to represent where he lived. And, you know, right now, we've got to add to that Prince George County because they've all been being left behind. And we've got to try to change a system, again, that is rigged for those folks in power. The money doesn't come back to Maryland. The money seems to go elsewhere. And we got to figure out how to get the money back to Maryland. We got great leadership with Wes Moore now. We got to work on a federal level as Team Maryland. And Ben Cardin always talks about Team Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've got to do, is be a team, work with Chris Van Hollen, who's on the budget committee in the Senate, got a lot of tremendous power there. And we got to bring the bacon home to Maryland and Baltimore City housing, Baltimore City entrepreneurship, Baltimore City education. That's got to be first and foremost.
I want to thank you, first of all, for, you know, for coming in. Certainly, you and the other candidates vying for Senate certainly have your work cut out for you, even and, you know, particularly for you and the work that you are currently doing on Capitol Hill and the divide that we are seeing there, not only on the Hill, but across this nation. But Congressman David Trone, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate your time, sir. I'm sure we will certainly be in touch.
Thanks for having us. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, August 3rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.